Welcome to
Lilliput's Movie Mausoleum.
I'm John, your host and sound guy, and today we have a special bonus show. Back in the day, quite a while ago at this point, toward the end of 2022, Katie Webb and I discussed Tales from the Crypt from 1972. Part of that interview involved some other topics. One that came up was some of our favorite horror of 2022. Katie came with a straight-up list of 15 of her favorite horror movies from 2022. And with this list, I thought, you know, this should be its own thing. And finally, with us being over halfway through the year and feeling a deep nostalgia for the amazing lineup of horror in 2022, I made it its own thing. So here are some of Katie Webb's favorite horror films from last year. I Frankensteined our convo into a bit more of an organized countdown style list. And sometimes we just breezed past a movie. So when we did this, Edit John will pop in and chat about some fun facts from the movie. We definitely tried to not give away any spoilers or even get deep into the plots. Just some of our thoughts and a great list. It was quite the year for horror. Okay, enjoy the show.
Prey.
I loved Prey.
Prey was wonderful. I do want to say officially, Katie was not sure if Prey or Hellraiser was going to be 14 or 15.
Now the question is Prey 14 or is Hellraiser 14?
I chose Hellraiser for 14 instead of 15 just because we talked about it more. All right, back to the show. Like I said, I loved Prey. Starring the wonderful Amber Midthunder. To prepare for this production, she and the rest of the cast attended a four-week boot camp where they learned weapons training and worked closely with the movie's stunt team. But prep work can only go so far, and as Midthunder explained it, the shoot was full of challenges. Amber said, "Honestly, there's no way that you can prepare for going through everything that was involved in the making of this movie. There were mud pits, there were monsters, there were rivers. There were so many things like ash, smoke, and stuff like that. There's so many different things that so many characters experience that you kind of just can't prepare." Midthunder also stated, "This movie would have existed whether or not I was the one to play Naru." Midthunder said, "Being chosen to do that, none of that was lost on me. It's a big deal for the franchise, but also for women, and specifically for Indigenous women. We don't have a hero. We don't have somebody to look at in film or television or media that we can feel proud of or that we can represent all things that we want to see or emulate that we're proud of. So, to have a movie with a character like this, it means everything in the world to me." Now, the movie can be enjoyed in the standard English-Comanche hybrid version, but there's also a cut that is pure Comanche. And of course, one of my other favorite bits of the movie is the Predator itself, played by Dane DeLegro, who had been playing basketball for 10 years before taking on a second career as a creature actor at 33. Dane said, "I did 2 months of parkour training to learn how to run and vault over trees. We'd shoot a scene where I'm running and I'm wearing a 75-pound suit and a 15-pound head. You're just carrying so much weight and it's so hot inside. Looking back, I can say it was fun and it was a great challenge. But when you're in it, man, it's tough." All right, Prey is amazing. It's a really fun part of the franchise and I feel like it just fit in perfectly. Definitely give it a watch if you haven't. It's an important one. Okay, back to Katie's list.
14. Hellraiser.
The new one, it's not as like flesh-y. That original one, I mean, the new one does not have the Frank angle. Like, there's no, like, Frank coming back and being built. Mm. So it immediately has less flesh. Like, Frank was, like, a huge part of that. There's no, like, hedonist in this one either. Like, Frank, like, you know, was searching for the ultimate pleasure and nothing was enough for him. And he wanted to be ripped by the Cenobites. Like, he wanted the chains and stuff. Like, at the end, he's like, just a piece of flesh. And he's like, it feels so good, you know?
Jesus wept.
Yeah, all of that. Like, he loved it. Like, he, you know, that was his, that was everything to him that moment. I've met somebody like that. and there's no hedonist in this new one.
Interesting, because that's like all Hellraisers kind of have that, except, you know, like the second one doesn't really, because it's just them trying to get that final girl kind of thing. But it seems like they usually go that route a lot.
That's the fun route to go.
For sure. Oh, I just like the Cenobites or whatever. I like,
yes.
I can't remember which one it is where they're all in the city. That one's hilarious and awesome.
That one is hilarious. I haven't watched that one in a really long time, actually. I feel like it's 4 or 5.
I wish it was just called Hellraiser in the City.
Hellraiser Takes Manhattan.
Yeah, Hellraiser Takes Manhattan, exactly.
You know, this one, though, has the Cenobites fucking on lockdown. The Cenobites in the new one are gorgeous.
Oh, hell yeah. That's all I need.
Yeah, you will love it. It's Cenobite rich, too. There's at least 10 of them. And the box is fucking sick in this one. It's a different, it's like more true to the book from what I understand. I haven't read the book, I'm not going to lie. Yeah, the Frank thing was like something they made up in the 80s, I guess, to make it more like an action movie is what I read an interview with Clive Barker about it, because it was really important for him to showcase like gay culture he saw in San Francisco, like, you know, BDSM rooms and things like that. But it was also important to draw like the 80s crowd. So they tried to make it action-y. And it is. And this one is a little more like moody and slower paced, which actually feels a little more right to me. I'm not going to lie. There's a lot to love about it. Yeah, there's a lot to love about it. But you got to go in not expecting the original to just be redone. It's a new movie.
Okay. Very cool.
13. Watcher.
Definitely number 13. Watcher. Yep.
Oh, Watcher. Yep.
Watcher was so good.
This was another one we breezed by, so let's look into it. First of all, IMDb storyline reads, a young American woman moves with her husband to Bucharest and begins to suspect that a stranger who watches her from the apartment building across the street may be a local serial killer decapitating women. Directed by Chloe Okuno, who also wrote and directed one of my favorite VHS segments of all time, Storm Drain, featured as the first story in VHS 94. And I feel like that really set the tone for the new vibe that the VHS franchise has taken on. Starring Micah Monroe, known to me by the lead of It Follows. I still remember watching that in a little indie theater down in Bellingham, Washington, and was blown away by how original it was. So a little connection to that. In Watcher, Julia goes to see Charade from 1963 at the cinema. This is the same movie that Jay, also played by Micah, goes to see with Greg at the beginning of It Follows. So to me, this one is a nice slow burn, very tense, uncomfortable. It has some nobody believes me except the audience vibes, similar to Rosemary's Baby, but definitely leaves you wondering. All right, I don't want to give away too much, so back to the list.
12. Hatching.
So 12 I have the movie Hatching. Hatching didn't get a lot of attention. Hatching is about a girl who, I think she, I can't remember if it's her or her mom, end up killing this crow. And she goes for a walk in the woods, I think to bury the crow. And she sees that there, it was a mom and that it had an egg. And so she decides that she's going to grow this egg. That's all you need to know. I will tell people, though, for people out there with like barf issues and phobia, this one's not for you.
Get a bag ready.
There's a lot of barf in this movie. That's it. That's all you get. Everybody go watch it. It's on Hulu.
Just from what you told me and then thinking of barf, I'm like, I think I know where this is going. Just from knowing how birds eat. Or mama birds.
There it is. There it is. Yeah, she's taking care of a bird. It's pretty. Yeah, it's a lot of barf. It's a lot of barf. However, this movie ticks all of the visual boxes for me. It is absolutely beautiful. Set design, costume design, vibe. And then juxtapositioned against a lot of barf.
If it was in the video store, that's what it would say. Boom. Number 12, Hatching.
Boom. Go watch it. If barf doesn't bother you too much.
11. Terrifier 2.
And this one I think is actually a lot more fun. I'm not going to lie. Terrifier is not for me.
Yeah, me either. It was a one time. Yeah.
Yeah, I haven't even finished it. I'm not going to lie. I've tried it twice and I shut it off. It is not the right vibe to me. But the vibe has switched.
Right on.
In Terrifier 2. Yes. So if that makes you feel better. Also, the soundtrack is great. It's very synthesizer, very 80s. I saw a short interview with Damian Leone about how he really paid attention to the feedback from Twitter from the first one, and he like learned and grew. And so in this one, we have a final girl, which a really badass final girl.
Very cool.
Which is always nice.
You need, yeah.
Yeah, the reason it's like hasn't come up on my list yet is because there's like, the end battle is like 45 minutes long. It's so long, you guys. This movie is over 2 hours.
I saw that.
Oh, it does not need to be. There is a point in the final battle where you're like, we're still going? Like, again? Whoa.
Another encore?
Yeah, literally, like, oh, Jesus. So that's why we haven't... It is in the top 15 because it is chef's kiss, man. I'm, honestly, if he had just edited that a little down, woo-wee! That would have been higher. The gore is exquisite. It is so cheesy. It has, like, trauma camp. Nah, maybe not as campy as trauma, but... It's campy. The acting is campy. The vibe, the soundtrack is very like Stranger Things, like Duffer Brothers synthesizer. Yep. 80s.
Very cool.
It slaps. It fucking slaps. It's just long as fuck.
that was the kind of talk I needed to actually do it. Cause yeah, of course, from seeing the other one, there's like a little bit of worry, but yeah.
I hear you. I know. The other one doesn't have the vibe.
All right. Edit John update here. First of all, just you'll be able to tell from the way we talk about it, but I want to slap a big old warning on Terrifier and Terrifier 2 and all these. They're very gory, very violent, but amazing practical effects. And you'll hear us talk about the movie more. But I've watched Terrifier 2 since multiple times. I love it. It's great. And it made it so that when I actually went back and watched Terrifier 1, I was able to enjoy it more. So there's that. But seriously, big old warning. If you are just an average Joe horror fan that likes jump scares or maybe some psychological stuff, but not a fan of the gore, this one is not your cup of tea. Okay, back to it.
The guy that plays Art the Clown is also unreal in this one. He's clowny in the first one, but I think it's just the minute you start watching this one. So the first like 5 minutes have the exact same vibe as the first one, because it's like they're just picking up right where we left off, like very Halloween 2, like where it's just like right from the moment we left off. But then Art walks into a fucking laundromat and the vibe literally switches. He like washes his clothes and like it just becomes like funnier. And then it cuts to a scene that has a different like filter on it with new music and the whole vibe switches and you're like, oh yeah, okay. It's really good. They deserve all the success that they're getting with this movie. It's really good.
Right on.
It's just low because it's got he needed a harder editing eye.
Yeah. Well, I'm sure the next time he'll take that, you know?
Yeah. Yeah.
Have you seen All Hallows Eve, the anthology that he was first in?
Yeah, no, I know about it. I've like watched YouTube clips and stuff because Terrifier wasn't for me, so I'm not as super excited to go back into the catalog. So I'm not super sure. I mean, Damien Leone, like writing, directing, creating Art the Clown, doing all of the gore himself. Awesome. That's the shit. And the fact that he's willing to listen to criticism and grow and become better, I can't fucking wait to see where this franchise goes. And the kill scenes go on for a long time, but they're campy. They're not brutal. I almost said they're not brutal. They're the most brutal kills of all time. But like, they're funny. Like, I don't know. I was literally laughing my ass off. Like, at one point, he grabs a girl by the scalp and just cuts her with scissors. Like, it's just like so ridiculous. It's not real, you know? Like, it's great. I loved it. It's so funny.
Right on. Terrifier 2.
Yeah, it's hilarious. I fucking loved it.
10. Crimes of the Future.
Okay, 10, I have Crimes of the Future.
Mm.
I did see a lot of people not super love this movie, and I think I kind of get that because the tone is pretty, like, dim and dreary. It's not like Videodrome. So Cronenberg does, like, fun things with electronics where the electronics are fleshy. So in Videodrome, there is this, like, alien thing that, like, comes out of the TV and, like, connects into this dude's back of his head. And then we see Cronenberg move on and do other movies, this one called Existence. And that is this video game system that you plug into your body and you play through, like, your body. But the video game system is, like, fleshy and it's, like, pulsating. Mm. And so we see him, like, bring some of that kind of stuff back. So this movie is all about we're living in a time where people are growing all these extra organs and they're, like, taking out their organs. So basically we're living in a time, like, post, you know, like, toxic waste food, and people are now, like, having these growths, and they're, like, there's a type of person that can eat plastic, and we're like, evolving. That's the word I'm looking for. We've evolved from capitalism into these creatures in this scenario.
Oh my God.
Yeah. And so some of these people do, like, performance art where they'll do surgeries and, like, take out their extra like body parts that they've grown, like tumors that they grow and things like that. And all of the tools that they use are, like, these fleshy controllers that you, like, put your fingers in and you, like, spread them out like that to control the, like, arms of the, like, a surgical machine and stuff. It's fleshy and weird. And Cronenberg kind of like has a sense of humor about himself. He's clearly heard like people like teasing him. So the movie actually is like super self-aware and it has like a really like cheeky sense of humor about it, which that is what really puts it in my top 10. Like, it's gross. It's weird. The acting is great. Viggo Mortensen is great. Kristen Stewart gives the best performance of her life, in my opinion. She is this like mousy little awkward creature who you think is like this like wild murderer, and she does all these things with her fingers, and it's so creepy. She's so good. I have some underdog movies that I'd love to talk about. Some movies that didn't get much attention because they were like low budget that were really like fun watches. One being So Vam, V-A-M, So Vam, like vampire.
Oh, that was on Shudder, I think.
Yeah, that one's on Shudder. I think they might all be on Shudder. Shudder is currently the biggest champion of independent horror.
Totally.
That Scream Box, that's coming for Shudder. That's Bloody Disgusting's new streaming service. Mm. Currently, they have two separate movie catalogs. So yeah, Shudder's got So Vam, which is like drag queens, very pro like transition. So you're like becoming a vampire and being able to kind of like beat up your foes now, kind of a thing. Very campy. In the vein of John Waters, if you like that, which I do. I love to watch drag queens kick an ass. Oh, Sissy. Sissy's really fun. That one's on Shudder too. Okay, two more that are on Shudder that are really good. Saloum, S-A-L-O-U-M. That one's based out of Africa. That one's really great about smugglers getting into some business they shouldn't be getting into. With zombies. And then Slashback. That movie takes place, I want to say, in like Alaska, mm-hmm. or like Canada.
Yeah.
But it's like an indigenous area specifically, and it's like fishing. The most beautiful shots and set of all time. Like, it's so beautiful, and it's like an alien landing movie set in the most beautiful place with all of these really fucking cute kids kicking ass. It's so fun. That one's on Shudder too.
Yeah, that one looks really good. Yeah, I know, it's like remote Alaskan village
with aliens. The aliens are like CGI aliens, you know, they're not our favorite kind of a thing, but everything else is great, so it's fine. It's kids, you know, less dangerous with kids around.
Yes, that's a good point.
Probably easy on the insurance. Yeah.
Yeah, that's a really good point.
It probably cost them an arm and a leg to film there, so they had to spend money on other things.
Very true.
9. Speak No Evil.
Oh boy, my number 9. Did you watch Speak No Evil?
Oh, yes, I did.
It's the most traumatizing movie of the year, I think.
yeah. So in the Strangers, that the scary scene where she's like, why are you doing this? And they're like, because you're home.
Mm-hmm.
This one, it was like, why are you doing this? And he was like, because you let me. And that was like the whole movie.
And what I loved about that was because you let me was because the whole like let me part was politeness, which is such an amazing societal like commentary. Yep. Oh, I fucking loved it.
Yeah, they should have left like 10 times.
They went back. You know, I could never even. I also love a movie where I, like, in a million years, I never would have told you what was about to happen at the end of that movie.
No.
Nope.
Because they even just kept that theme going because you let me.
Yeah.
It's like, no.
Because you let me.
I think they even said, I thought you would fight harder. They said something, other roast like that.
You were like an easy one. You were an easy one.
Yeah.
That movie is easily, I think, the most traumatizing movie of the year.
Yeah. So I guess warning, like.
Yeah, warning. I'm just come out right out and say it. It's the most traumatizing movie of the year. Do what you will with it.
Yeah. If you like a movie with hope.
This ain't it.
This is not for you.
This ain't it. Mm-hmm. It made the list because it's the most traumatizing movie of the year.
I agree.
Very successful horror movie.
I agree. At the end of it, I was just like, whew. All right.
I immediately had to talk to somebody. Like, I needed a therapy session immediately.
I did that with Amalia right away. I was like, I just watched this movie and just had to explain the movie. And I was like, it was one of the weirdest things I've ever watched. I'll never be passive again.
Yeah, right? Well, stand up for myself. Yeah. Something feels weird. If you get out of a situation that feels weird, you are out of it safely and you are home in the comfort of your home. What? Don't go back. Don't go back.
It sparked like a fight or flight kind of response in me, I think.
Whew. Brutal one, you guys. Watch out for Speak No Evil.
Yeah.
It's brutal. Again, for sure. It is on my list because it is the most traumatizing movie of the year. More traumatizing than Terrifier 2, trust me.
8. Bodies, bodies, bodies.
Bodies, bodies, bodies.
Still haven't watched that one.
It's great.
I'm excited.
It was a movie I went in knowing it was going to be fun. I was like, this is going to be fun. This is going to be a good time. I know it. Like, you saw the trailer. Pete Davidson, you're like, I'm gonna laugh. This will be good. It's great. Do you like Clue?
Oh yeah.
Yeah, you'll love it. It's like a murderous Clue. It's great.
That was my favorite game as a kid. Very cool.
It is a whodunit movie. I didn't go into it knowing that. But I don't think that made it better for me though. Like, it's just great. It's fun. It's a whodunit.
I love a whodunit.
You never know.
Yeah. It did give me like a kind of Scream vibe from the trailer.
It does the fun thing that a lot of horror movies do, and you find a lot of little nods to all kinds of other horror movies throughout it. I love that shit. That's so fun. Little Easter eggs everywhere. It is very like Scream vibes. It is super fun. And like a whodunit has to have like a good ending, because when they flop, everything you just spent going through feels like it flops. And this don't flop.
Very cool.
It's great. Yeah. Bodies, bodies, bodies. It's number 8, which I think is potentially a surprise to some people, because I think maybe some people didn't take that movie very seriously, but which I get. I get it. It came out in a silly MTV kind of a way, but I think it's great.
7. X.
X was so good. Did you see X?
Oh, X was terrific.
Terrific.
And Mia Goth is like one of my heroes.
Let's talk about Mia Goth. I love Mia Goth. We know she's not nominated for awards because they don't acknowledge horror movies, but man, she deserves awards for those movies. She also deserves awards for the outfits she wore on the red carpet to premiere those movies.
That I'm not as familiar with.
She's an icon.
But she is an icon, so I'm sure I would agree. And just playing both characters is so amazing.
We're getting a third one.
Maxine. Yeah. And then, I don't know, was Pearl on your list as well?
Pearl's not on my list, actually. Not because it doesn't deserve to be in anybody's top 15 by any means. Her performance is incredible. Simply because it's just like not much my vibe. The Americana kind of shit, I'm just kind of turned off a little bit by
me.
But the movie is excellent. Like, so good. Again, any other year, it would be in a top 10. But
yeah,
there's just too, I have too many options, so it didn't make it. I was Pearl for Halloween.
Well, there you go.
So I gave it some love. X was really successful for me also in a lot of ways beyond Mia Goth. Like, I thought its use of Texas Chainsaw references were really smart because I felt like if you knew Texas Chainsaw, you were in a new club while watching X, and there were certain camera angles he used that were repeated from Texas Chainsaw Massacre that, like, you were already, like, you knew to be scared. Like, you were already taught to be scared from this, like, moment. So I thought X had, like, a really cool, like, depth because there were all these other ways to be scared if you were a horror fan, which was special to me. That's kind of why I also was just, like, it was so much more to me than Pearl because it had a lot more, like, horror going on for me nostalgically.
X was, it was everything I wanted. It was funny, and it was a weird set, and it was terrifying, and it was brutal, and it was made me uncomfortable, made me feel icky a couple times, but not too far, right? He rode the edge of it so perfectly in both.
Perfect, yep.
In both Pearl and, because there was a moment in Pearl where I was like, please don't go where I think you're going to, and it didn't, and I was like, thank you.
And he didn't.
Yeah.
Yes. I love those moments. Thank God.
6. Resurrection.
My number 6 might be controversial, but I think the movie Resurrection is my number 6. This movie's intense. This is a movie that does not make you feel good.
Sometimes necessary.
Yep, I am a broken human, and it has become, it has a high rewatch value for me. It's become a comfort movie for me. But this is one of those movies that has no blood, has no gore. People could argue it's not a horror movie, but it's streaming on Shudder, and it is absolutely, without question, a horror movie, especially when you watch the end. The end really nails the horror title in the coffin, but, like, it could be argued.
Interesting.
By dummies.
By dummies. By people that have nothing better to do.
Yeah, by people that take things way too serious.
And won't let someone else decide that it is what it is for them.
Yeah, you can just say it's not for you. Just say it's not for you. It's very drab. Like, it's a very, like, gray movie. It takes place in gray days. It's very kind of, like, empty a lot of time. There's not a lot of music. There isn't necessarily a soundtrack that slaps. And that is all part of its completely uncomfortable nature. yeah, Resurrection is intense. Women in, like, abusive relationships probably might get a little triggered by it. So I'll throw that out there. Very successful in its, what it's trying to achieve.
5. Nope.
Nope is so gorgeous. Talk about a slamming soundtrack. I love how in Jordan Peele movies, he takes a modern-ish song, like, from the last, like, 20, 30 years, and changes it. Like, there's, like, an orchestral version, or there's, like, some cool, like, remix that fits, like, the vibe. Like, we saw that in Us with, like, I Got Five on it, and he did it again in Nope. Yeah, like really impactful for me, as like I am like music really makes a movie for me. So
totally
all that kind of shit is right. It feels like it's for me.
And really pulled from like this kind of like action Western kind of like triumphant music, right? Too. That like,
yes,
the spooky music hit, and then that kind of like,
hell yeah,
like kind of.
Hell yeah, like very theatrical. And honestly, it's like when you watch a movie like that, you're like, this motherfucker had so much money and he did such a good job with it. Like, woo! The blood, the raining blood on the house. Are you kidding me? That was so ill. That was so sick.
It was very like high strangeness horror, because there was a lot of stuff that I was like, I've read that in reports. I've read that in reports. Right? I've read that in reports. Yeah.
I even went and saw it with John Tenney. He did give Jordan Peele props. He said, wow, Jordan Peele's been reading a lot of Keel. And I was like,
yeah,
look at you.
Yep.
Very cool. That's what I'm saying. Like any other year, Nope would be number one. Hands down.
Yeah. Yeah. You're right.
Last year, Nope would be number one.
You're totally right.
But I'm sorry. This year, there's some really stiff competition. I really loved that Jordan Peele referenced a real happening, like the with the monkey story. Mm-hmm. He referenced a real happening, but then he made his own like world around it. Like, have you seen all of the like Gordy's, like whatever, like the show coming out? And there's like a whole spread in Fangoria about that show specifically, not even about Nope.
That's so funny.
I really appreciate the extra mile like that. Like that kind of like, even though it was like after marketing, it's still really cool. He kind of gave us a whole world to exist in. And it'll be interesting to see if his other movies exist in that world.
Oh, yeah.
You know?
Yeah, I appreciate that and love that. Because you know that the people making these movies know so much more about the world.
Yes.
That they've created than they share.
And yes.
So it's always nice when you get a little extra.
I've been loving all that. I feel like I'm still getting new stuff coming out and seeing new stuff about the Nope universe. And like Kiki Palmer, like Akira slide, get right out of town. That was so sick.
I saw a thing where someone brought that up and he was like, yep, I did it.
We all noticed it too. We were all like, "Ooh!" in the theater, just like, "Yo, yes."
So good.
Also, every outfit Kiki Palmer wore was 10 out of 10 in that movie.
Also, he talked about the sibling relationship there. That was cool, and that he actually doesn't have any siblings. And he's always been envious. So that's kind of like why he explored that rather than like a romantic relationship or anything.
Way easier to watch. Way more fun to watch. They had a really realistic sibling relationship to me.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I don't like mind the romantic thing, but sometimes it feels like they just throw it in there to, because they feel like they have to.
Yeah. I know. It often kind of sours like the plot a little bit.
Amelie is always like, why couldn't they just stay friends? Why couldn't that just be
literally
part of it?
Just a thing. I know. And so many cases too, there's all kinds of like weird, like misogyny going on when that kind of is happening too. Like the woman couldn't exist on her own. Like, you know, yeah, it gets dicey. It gets dicey. It was way more fun to have siblings.
4. Something in the Dirt.
All right. Have you seen my fourth movie, Something in the Dirt?
Nope. See, y'all get movies, and so do I.
I know. It's a newer one. I watched it recently, and it upset my whole ranking. It changed everything around. Are you a young reader? Are you a Synchronicity fan?
I am indeed. I can't say like I've read tons of him, but yeah, very much into the synchronicity stuff for sure.
Well, if you like synchronicities and you like retro causality, you might want to watch Something in the Dirt.
Oh, well, definitely there.
Oh,
hey, definitely okay. There.
How about that? That movie is for us. That movie is for the weirdos. That movie is for us. 100%.
Very cool.
You will. It's so good. Have you watched those dudes' movies, Aaron Moorhead and Justin Benson? They do The Endless and...
Oh, yeah. I have watched The Endless.
Yeah, that's the same guys.
Right on.
Yeah, Something in the Dirt. Highly recommend. Number 4.
3. Hellbender.
Yeah, Hellbender was so good. It's so rad. Every person I've shown to was just like, yeah! Like, that movie is like metal. That movie's so metal. It's so good. Yeah, everybody watch Hellbender. It's on Shudder.
So Hellbender, I believe technically a 2021 film, but it's really good. It was done by a DIY filmmaking group known as the Addams Family. Mother Toby Poser, father John Addams, and daughter Zelda Addams. They all pitch in. They're all co-writers, co-directors. Zelda and John are also credited as cinematographers. Toby is also credited with costume design, and John did the editing and the score. Knowing all this makes it even more impressive. Zelda, who plays Izzy, said, "It's interesting. I can't actually remember a day where we're not making a movie. Right when we finished The Deeper You Dig, we started pondering our next movie and started making it as soon as possible. Because our filmmaking life and our family life are perfectly intertwined. We wake up, have breakfast, go out and shoot, and then come home and edit while we're talking about other things. It's so fun." Definitely check it out. It's wonderfully witchy and dark and metal and just good all around. All right, back to the list.
John's honorable mention. Deadstream.
I haven't watched it yet.
Really?
Loved it.
Yo, you're going to have so much fun.
I know it's on Shudder.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Yeah, it's like wrote, directed, starred, and made the score. Joseph Winter, I think, is his name.
Yep. Yeah, I did see like an interview that he was doing on like, because Shudder had a whole like they were live tweeting while they were all watching it. So I saw like some stuff about it, but
it's really fun. It's really self-aware. It's like next level found footage style. He's a streamer.
Cute.
And it's just really.
Yep.
It's really fun. It's really like it's super well put together.
Cool. Okay.
Cracks you up.
Okay.
And yeah, he had a, him and I think it's his wife. They're like a writing team together, I think. VHS, the new one, 94. They have a.
I haven't watched that.
The last story in that one.
Okay.
And it's my favorite one is their story.
Is it? Okay. Yeah, I know Philo has a story.
The soundtrack for his is really fun. Really weird. And the vibe is really strange. But yeah, I think Winters was my favorite in that one too. I just really like their style, what they're doing.
Cool.
2. Barbarian.
Justin Long with the tape measure. Joke of the year.
It was so
yep,
good.
Joke of the year. Funniest moment in a movie. I was cackling. Like hysterically cackling. Actually, I wasn't even alone. The movie theater was hysterically cackling.
I think me and Amalia were definitely laughing the loudest, but it was so good.
We had some rowdy teens in the movie theater when I went.
Usually for the horror flicks.
Yeah, it kind of amplifies the mood, you know?
Yeah, yeah.
Kind of adds.
For sure. Barbarian is my number one pick. And Amalia's. So let's give y'all a break for me and let Amalia talk about Barbarian.
Barbarian is one of John and I's favorite horror movies that came out of 2022. And what I found, what we both found interesting, really, is that the guy who wrote it and directed it, Zach Krieger, he's a comedian. My best friend actually met him before, back when he used to be part of the Whitest Kids You Know. Also, a fellow Pisces, so hey, hey. And he's married to Sarah Paxton. Aquamarine fans will know.
Yeah, I don't know.
So if you didn't get a chance to watch Barbarian, or if it just fell off your radar, it's about a young woman who discovers that her rental home is already occupied by a stranger. She decides to stay, but she discovers that there's even odder things in that house. And one of the many treasures that the film gives you is the Scream King. Justin Long comes in, really steals some scenes. And what I found interesting about that, I just thought that the role was written for Justin Long. It was not. It was offered to Zac Efron, and he turned it down. And then Krieger had to rethink the role, and then he gave it to Justin Long. And thank you, Zac Efron. I do not think I would have really liked that movie. I mean, you're a great actor, but it was not for you. Let's just say that. So the actor Richard Brake is in the movie. I found out about this movie fact only today. So it came out long after the movie had come out. He shared to Instagram that he attended a late night screening of the movie, and he noted that a particular group of teenagers sitting a few rows behind him were really into the movie, getting creeped out. And when it was over, they were leaving the theater and they're using their flashlights on their phones, and the light accidentally caught Brake's face, and the teens recognized him from the movie and they screamed and ran out in genuine fear. I'd probably be a little bit happy, you know, very pleased that I had that effect on people, but then I'd also be really hurt. Because I'd be like, am I looking too rough tonight? So, Barbarian is set in the city of Detroit, and some of it was filmed there in the Brightmoor neighborhood, but the rest of the movie was filmed in Sofia, Bulgaria. Never saw that coming. Never. Not once. Even knowing that, looking at the movie, I'd be like, yeah, that's Bulgaria. And if you pay close attention to the movie, the writer and the director, he has a little cameo as a friend at a club in it. Something to think about if you decide to watch it, or if you want to rewatch it, is Jordan Peele is said to have an invisible hand in the shaping of the eventual story, because Zach and Peele are good friends. And he had spoken to Peele about the movie when he was writing it. So it's pretty fun. When you think about it, it makes sense. The mother's hair on the baby bottle was a mistake. I guess some of the wig got stuck to the nipple, and then the director thought it looked so gross, he added more. The film's special effects are largely done practical, which is one of our favorites. I feel like it has more heart. They had a soft rule while making the movie that they would not use any technology that John Carpenter didn't have while making The Thing from 1982. It's a fun watch. Very original. I had a blast while watching. You know, I went into the theater expecting something and got something entirely better. So, kumashish. Bye.
Also too. Fresh.
Oh, shit. I fucked up my whole thing because Fresh was originally my number two movie and I totally just forgot all about it. It's not on my list all of a sudden.
Fresh was great. I thought Fresh was great. And it was like, I love when you're like cheering for the person escaping and you're just like, mop, you know, like it was that kind of thing.
It works. You're like, fuck yeah. I loved Fresh because I felt like it had giallo vibes.
Mm.
And that's my shit. I saw a little bit of like Argento influence in Fresh, which I thought was cool.
Very cool. That's like world I haven't gotten into yet either. So very much need to. Yeah.
Oh, man. Yeah. Giallo really shaped a lot of my opinions on horror. I did do a few movie studies in college. So the old giallo and French New Wave were real genres that I got into pretty deep.
One. A Wounded Fawn.
Okay, so my number one is actually A Wounded Fawn.
Oh, I just watched it. So good. I watched it 2 days ago.
So good. Woo! That is exactly my shit.
I love the color and the...
Yep. The soundtrack. Clapping.
Yeah, not relying on CGI, the soundtrack.
None. All practical.
The film grain.
Shot on 16mm.
Really?
Yeah, baby.
That's fantastic. I was like, if that's like a film grain filter, it's really good. That's all I kept thinking is because it was so perfectly fuzzy.
That was the real deal. Woo!
Yeah, that was legit. That was really good.
That movie is exactly my shit. Like, that is what I want a surreal, beautiful, weird movie with a soundtrack that fucking slaps. You get me, you give me some synthesizers, and my ear is in. I need to have the synthesizers.
Written and directed by Travis Stevens, also known for one of my favorites from the previous year, Jacob's Wife. Starring the legend Barbara Crampton. So A Wounded Fawn stars Sarah Lind and Josh Rubin, and they are both totally captivating. He also starred in Scare Me, another fun one to watch from 2020, and directed Werewolves Within, which I still haven't watched yet, but I believe it's on Hulu. It looks great. The vibe of A Wounded Fawn is very 1970s. Like Katie said, shot on 16mm film, and it truly, truly works. It's beautiful. The first half is classic killer thriller that completely shifts in the second half, a mixture of folk horror and psychedelic visuals that keeps you engaged. I loved it. And the ending credit scene is one of my favorites, other than Pearl, of course, but Mia Goth. The soundtrack is by Vol, and it's so good. Definitely probably my favorite score of the year. Of course, in the show notes, I'll link their Bandcamp. Very cool retro synth sounds, crazy experimental percussive stuff, and just some wild sound design. I know he uses a lot of modular synthesizers, which is a rabbit hole I have not yet gone down, but I know someday I will. So here's a little ode to Vol's work in A Wounded Fawn. Cool. I think that's a good 2022 horror list.
It's long. Yeah, it's a long one. But there's a lot of movies I didn't even name.
Right?
Look at all these movies. This is just a list of what I've watched for movies this year. Oh my God, we didn't even talk about We're All Going to the World's Fair or No Exit. Those movies are good. I mean, man, we could talk forever. It's crazy. So many good movies.
Yeah, this year was really, really, really good. A lot of original ideas.
Yes.
As far as original movies go, I think Whore's got it going on right now because everything else is just a reboot, a remake, a
Marvel
sequel. Marvel. Yeah, it's what I meant to say, but didn't say it. But yes, everything is that.
Horror is like one of the only genres that even like explores other types of storytelling. Well, besides like if you want to include sci-fi under the horror umbrella or whatever. But
yeah, well, it can be like horror plus any other thing. There's like no other genre that can do that. It can just be like any other thing plus a horror element. It's just a good vessel for really good storytelling.
2023 is kicking off in the same vein. We already have a Cronenberg movie, and then we have Megan, and then there's like another one that I'm forgetting. There's three biggies coming right out the fucking gate in January. Coming for our necks. They're like, we're claiming these lists right in January.
I love it.
The other day I was like, oh my God, The Black Phone came out this year. Fuck. I didn't even have The Black Phone on. Oh my God. I know. The Black Phone was great.
Too many.
Unreal. You can just skip a really great movie. That's the kind of year it's been. And that's the kind of year it's going to be next year, I feel like. Next year, it's coming for us, too.
Thank you for listening to another episode of Anomalous Waves. Make sure and check the show notes for a list of all the movies we mentioned today, as well as all the relevant links. I want to know, what are some of y'all's favorite horror films from 2023? Go ahead and message us on Instagram at Anomalous Waves, or email us at anomalouswaves@gmail.com, or just head to anomalouswaves.com, which is our link tree with all the links all in one place, as well as ways to message us and different ways to support the show. Best way to do that is to join the Strange Pals Club. You can do that at patreon.com/anomalouswaves. And a big thank you to Katie Webb for joining us. This convo happened over half a year ago, so I can't wait to talk again and discuss maybe some 2023 horror. All right, thanks so much for listening. Bye.